My name is Misty, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language, from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, our speaker is David S. from the Wicked Soba Group in Peachtree City. Did I say it right?
Hi, everybody. I'm David Stoller, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and it wasn't always that way. And I want to thank Tim for inviting me out to speak. Wes put that together. And thank Trey and my buddy Todd, my brothers from the Wicked Sober Group, Alcoholics Anonymous, that came up here to support me and listen to my dribble one more time. They hear me probably entirely too much, but they love me anyway, and I'm grateful for men like that in my life. You know, I'm supposed to be here tonight. And that doesn't sound like much, but at an early age, I thought I wasn't supposed to be here. And I spent a lot of my life trying to fix God's mistake. You know? And what you'll hear in my story tonight is the transformation from thinking I was mistaken and there's no use for me on this planet to knowing fully that I'm supposed to be here. And God's got a part in this deal. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm sure some of you came in after we said the Serenity Prayer. And some of you might have been on your phones while we were saying the Serenity Prayer, or you're just mailing it in or whatnot. I know I can still do that after many years in Alcoholics Anonymous. But somebody here, and I don't know who, and you might not even know right now, but somebody here needs to hear what I had to say tonight. You know? And so if we could all just take a minute to invite our God into the room and ask that power to use me to speak what you might need to hear tonight. Okay, so I have a sobriety date. The date of my last drink is December 16th, 2009, and that's not my first sobriety date. My first sobriety date was February 22nd of 1986, and since then I've taken 4 1-year cakes and 3 3-year cakes, 2 9-year cakes, and just took a cake for 14 years. And I did the math the other day. I'm 57 years old, and I've spent 2/3 of my life in and around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't plan that. If you had told me that when I went to my first meeting that I'd still be here at 57 years old, I would have told you you're crazy. I have a home group. That's the Wicked Sober Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Peachtree City. And we meet. We have a men's meeting that meets at 5:30 on Mondays. And we have a speaker meeting, co-ed speaker meeting, every Friday night at 7:30. And we just started that meeting in January. And I'm glad that's my home group. Yeah. I feel... I don't know if it's pride or whatnot, but I get emotional with my home group. I'm just so happy to be there and be a part of these guys' lives. And we started the speaker meeting, like I said, the first of the year, and we've been just hitting, been blessed with one great speaker after another down there. And this is a meeting that as I shared with some of the guys, you know, with the people in Peachtree City and Noonan didn't even know they wanted. You know, they tried to stop us from starting this meeting, and we started that, you know, there's a buzz in the room. You know, there's a buzz in this room. I felt incredibly comfortable walking in here. It reminded me of some of the clubhouses that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous in the late 80s in California, where I'm from. And podiums like this and rooms like this with the traditions and whatnot on the walls and lockers for each meeting to store their stuff and see your little history bookcase out front. You know, and I know I'm in the right place. And I have a sponsor that knows that he sponsors me, Todd B. from the Wicked Sober Group, and he knows that because we meet for lunch almost every Tuesday at Jim and Nick's restaurant in Sharpsburg. And he's been sober a long time, and he's got a sponsor that's been sober a long time, that this used to be his home group here at NABA. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm blessed to have a few guys that call me their sponsor, and I know I sponsor them because they show up at my house on a regular basis. They don't need to call. They need to be at my house. Yeah. I need to lay eyes on them. And they do that. And I'm grateful, you know, it keeps me sharp. It keeps me in the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I know I can't give away what I don't have. You know? I don't like what I got today. I like what I got. I never really know what I'm going to share about when I come here. The one thing I'm going to tell you is my name, my home group, my sobriety date. And we've got that far, you know. I come from a normal family, not a healthy family, normal. We were screwed up, you know. And mom hated dad, and dad hated mom, and my sisters hated me, and I hated them, and the dog pissed in the house a lot. Figure that out. It had anxiety, you know, and if you lived in our house, you would, you know, it was not a happy place, and I didn't realize that till I realized it young, but I just knew I never felt right in my own skin, you know, felt like a visitor from another planet. Nobody gave me the tourist guide, you know, and we're here in rooms, you know, coming in here, when people started to talk about things that I understood is when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it took things like, you know, I always felt less than or better than, and that was the case. I could hang out with older people or younger people. I couldn't get along with my peers, and that's how I was. And like I said, I lived in this crazy house, and on the outside it looked great. We had a house with a pool. I was born in Santa Barbara, California, but we moved when I was four, but we had a pool, and we lived on a cul-de-sac full of kids, and you know, everybody's mom was your mom. If you've been in a neighborhood like that, and you got whacked by some strange lady. You know, that's how our street was. You got out of line, you know, and that was okay. But we had fun, and we had wide open fields to ride our bikes in and build forts and all these things. But I start stealing when I'm four. I don't know why. I like stealing. We got any reformed thieves in here? Maybe you're currently a thief and you just haven't got honest yet. But you know, I love stealing, you know. And what it did was it got me out of me. I felt something that I didn't feel before. And I got hooked on sugar at a young age. I was a candy dealer in the fourth grade, in the fifth grade. And just like with drugs and alcohol, I was not a good dealer because I could barely just be my own habit. You know, I could barely sell enough to re-up the next morning, you know. And video games came out, and I get hooked on video games. And I do everything for video games that I ended up doing for drugs and alcohol. Lying, cheating, stealing, you know, and all get out of me. I can't stand being in my own skin. It's not good to be David Stoller, you know. And I didn't see any brand new people here tonight, and I didn't see anybody here looking for a sponsor either. And maybe you might be too shy to raise your hand, and it's okay. But, you know, if you're new, or even if you've been here for a while, and it's not good to be you, well, if you haven't done the work, you ain't got a right to claim nothing about what Alcoholics Anonymous has. Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't about going to meetings and drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and telling lies. You know, maybe get a bunch of commitments. Our book doesn't talk about this here. It doesn't talk about that. It says we get to do these things once we've done some other things called 12 steps. See, I didn't have any of that. I didn't come from a spiritual house. We didn't talk about God. Remember the first time I heard about Jesus, and they talked about this guy willingly getting nailed to the cross. And I know I'm in the Bible Belt. I hope it doesn't offend anybody, but you know, I hear that. I'm 5 years old, and I said, what a punk. Who the hell would do that? My God, what a moron. You know? And I got sent to Sunday school when I was 7. I got kicked out when I was 9 because I wanted to play doctor with the girl in the closet when I wanted to learn about Jesus. She might have been the Virgin Mary, I don't know. But anyway, I went back to that church group at about 12, 13, well, no, because I started drinking, so it was about 13, and they used to have a dollar bus to to go to the beach. You know, they take you to the beach for a dollar all day long and bring you home, and I'm down there selling dope and bringing a fifth of booze with me in my beach bag with the church kids, you know, and they didn't like that, you know. And I get invited to the Catholic youth group, and that was fun. And of course, what do they do after group? Well, you go get the weed, we'll go get the beer, and we'll go play volleyball. You know? All right. But I didn't have any God in my life. And we didn't talk about it at home, and I started getting, I had taken drinks before, but never got a buzz. First time I got a buzz, I was 12 years old, and mixed Coors Light and Southern Comfort with some guys that I thought were real cool. They're about 5 years older than me. They smoked cigarettes and drove hot rods and wore leather jackets, had long hair, and they were cool. And you see, that's my real thing, is I want to be cool, right? Just want to be cool. And the problem is, it's always somebody else's cool. And if I could be like Trey, I'd be cool. I could be like Todd, I could be cool. But I'm me, and it sucks, right? These guys are cool, and I want them to like me. And I told my mom I wouldn't drink, I wouldn't smoke. I was already smoking, though. But I won't drink, I won't do drugs, you know. I know I'll end up with a needle in my arm in the gutter, dead real quick if I do that stuff. So, but they asked me if I want to have a beer, and I'm all, yep. Yeah, we drink Coors Light, Southern Comfort, and the first time I get a buzz. And it closed up that hole. All of a sudden, it was good to be here, and it was good to be me. You know, and the only problem was there was no girls around. I said, fine, man, I could finally talk to the girl I want to talk to. And I don't know if you're like me, but when it comes to members of the opposite sex or who I'm attracted to, you know, I can't talk to the ones I really want to talk to, and the ones that talk to me I don't really want to talk to, you know. But I end up with them, otherwise I end up alone. Right? And from that day forward, I knew it didn't matter that I woke up the next morning with a hangover. I didn't know what it was. I had a really bad headache. My vision was blurry, and I had thrown up on the bathroom wall. But I knew I was going to do that again. And I couldn't wait to do it. And I'm 12 years old, at 14, it's the summer before my freshman year of high school, and I'm tripping on acid with my buddy David Crocker, which anybody still use zigzags to roll weed. You know, the guy in the zigzag pack, my buddy David Crocker looked just like the zigzag man. And we're tripping on acid, and we go into the local pizza parlor, and there's a bunch of his friends. He's older than me. These people just graduated, and they're all drinking on fake IDs, and they pull me across, and they're like, yeah, Dave, you know, there's a legend about you at the high school already. What a maniac you are. You know? That was the proudest day of my life. You know? Yeah. They're talking about me, and I lived that forever. You know, bad press is better than no press. You know, they're talking about me, and that's a good thing. And I rode that for a long time. And you know what? If I had gone to treatment then, they would have told me I was an alcoholic. They would have told me I was a drug addict in treatment. But what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it asked me two questions on the first page of chapter 4. It says, if when you want to quit entirely, you know, to paraphrase, you can't stay stopped, or when drinking, you have little or no control over how much you drink. You see, I had never drank or used against my will at that time. That's what those two statements are really saying. I drink and use when I don't want to. Right? You see, I don't see a problem with if I go to a backyard kegger party and my mission is to drink as much out of that keg for my $2 as I can, hopefully get screwed up out of my mind. Maybe I'll get lucky and meet her, you know, before I end up passed out under a bush, right? Throwing up on myself. See, that wasn't a problem, because that was my mission. See? That was my mission. And the problem started much later on when I wanted to control and enjoy what I'm drinking and what I'm using. But every time I drank, I'm just going to get loaded. You know, and that's what I did. And yeah, did I have consequences? You know, my parents didn't like it. The school didn't like it. The police didn't like it. You might have not liked it. I didn't care. It was worth the price. Right? And leave me alone. There's no problem here. I'm doing exactly what I want to do. Exactly what I want to do. But what happens when I just want to have a half pint buzz? Now we laugh in Alcoholics Anonymous and say, who would ever want to have a half pint buzz? Yet the book tells me that the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is to be able to drink and use, to be able to drink like a gentleman or a lady. Right? And now there came a point a long time later with alcohol that I just wanted to have pint buzz. I just wanted to take the edge off. I'm tired of going to jail. I'm tired of going to prison. I'm tired of wrecking cars. I'm tired of losing jobs. I'm tired of wanting to die every day. That was a long time coming. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, February 22nd of 1986, I was 18 years old. I spent my 19th birthday in that treatment center, and they told me I was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and all I thought I had was a minor crack problem. Because I had smoked some crack that I didn't want to smoke. Right? And but I hadn't drank anything I didn't want to drink. And from 1986 until 1996, I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm crackhead. Right? And I didn't like Narcotics Anonymous because they all thought they were badasses. And Cocaine Anonymous had hot chicks, but no program. And Alcoholics Anonymous had recovery. And reasonably attractive ladies. And they had a lot of meetings. And it fit my schedule. And I kind of wanted what they had. Right? But I wasn't an alcoholic. But I would say I was. You know, so I could share. And I'd get sponsors, and I would take steps, or start to take steps, you know, and stop. And I'd get sober and start to take some steps. You know. And I'm doing all these things like I talked about, going to lots of meetings, got lots of commitments, smoking lots of cigarettes, telling lots of lies, and always finding it necessary to take a drink. Like I told you, I had 16 months and went out. I went out because I got stuck on a horse step because I didn't trust a sponsor. We talked about sponsors, you know, raising your hand if you wanted a sponsor, you know, it takes a lot of trust and a lot of faith, a lot of courage to trust your stuff with somebody else. And I had heard this guy that was my sponsor talking about somebody else in a way that I didn't think was right, and I wasn't going to trust him with my stuff because, don't you know, I am the worst, most horrible human being in the world. Jeffrey Dahmer is a punk compared to me. I guess nobody knows who Jeffrey Dahmer is. You know? And but I think I'm the worst guy in the world, and I can't share my what I find to be garden variety bullshit with, right? And you see, like I told you, I want you to like me, I want to be cool, but you see, I can't hurt this guy's feelings. I mean, he might drink if David Stoller fires him as a sponsor, don't you know? That'd be horrible. So I end up getting loaded, you know, and I come back in and I get a sponsor and I share that inventory and I start making amends and I start sponsoring guys and I quit making amends. And then I meet her, you know, the mail order bride from God. You gotta watch that one, you know. She checked all the boxes, right? And this is long before Tinder or anything. This is And I knew very early on, like, this, there's too many red flags here. This is going to work. Doesn't matter how much I love, you know, we're in love, don't you know? Yeah. And we're going to get married, and we're going to do all this stuff. And I know pretty early on I can't do this. But you know what? I don't have the courage to tell her to beat feet. Or I don't even have the courage to just quit calling her and ghosting her. You know? No. So and I find out later on that she's the same way. And so we get married. I drink the night before. And drink on the honeymoon. Start smoking crack not long after that. And I was, you know, and all because I'm violating myself. You know? In the end, I'm violating myself. I want to think rules don't apply to me. And I want to think I can do things and not pay a consequence for them. And I ended up going to prison in August of 1996. I'd like to rob liquor stores with squirt guns to support my crack habit. And the agua pistola bandito. And I spent 7 years in California State Prison. Not a lot to say about that. I got real close with God there. I was sober there. I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, in the California Department of Corrections for the 7 years I was there. And I come out, and I'm going to be the AA poster boy, don't you know? And I get out, and I'm doing the deal. I learned a skill while I was in there that I could actually make good money out on the streets, and I'm doing that. And that job actually had me working on the grounds of the two largest drug and alcohol treatment centers in the nation at the time. Unfortunately, COVID closed them both. I'm going to a ton of meetings. I got sponsored. I've done the steps again. And I stop again. I stop living this principled life. I'm doing everything on the outside. You know, I don't know if we got any people here that might have a checkbox program. I'm not asking you to raise your hand, but you might take a look at yourself and ask yourself if you're just mailing it in every day. No, boop, I went to a meeting, check, boop. I had my shoes under the bed, so I prayed for the 15 seconds it took me to pull my shoes out from under my bed, check. Oh, I called my sponsor and left a message knowing that he wasn't going to answer at this time of day, check. All right. And I read page 86 and 87, and blah, blah, blah. All right. Just racing through it. Racing through it. And what happens there is I'm out and I'm doing great and I'm going to 10 meetings a week. I'm sponsoring 5 guys. I go on 3 panels a month. I got commitments all over town. My home group was a hall like this, the Rafters in Santa Clarita, and they were wanting me to be the chair of the steering committee. I've arrived, don't you know? I felt bad. I actually heard somebody, this young girl, tell me a long time ago. She's like, "Yeah, my goal in life is to become the chair of the Rafters." That's a low bar. You know, I come in, I'm just going to be somebody. And I'm not putting down Alcoholics Anonymous at all, because I'm as alcoholic as can be, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? There's a lot more in life than just Alcoholics Anonymous. I end up taking a drink, taking a hit, and I had gone from doing a book study with a sponsee. To the liquor store, to the dope spot, to the hotel, in a hospital 5 days later with staph infection, both my feet, almost dead. Yeah. At 9.5 years sober. Going to 10 meetings a week and sponsoring 5 guys and doing 3 panels a month and doing all this stuff. All checkbox. I'm a prisoner of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous like this, like, if you put anything in front of your recovery, you're sure to drink. And I thought my recovery meant meetings. I thought my recovery meant how many commitments I had in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I've read this book a lot of times, cover to cover. I don't know how many I've gone through that were brand new that I highlighted up and did, but I never saw the line on page 19 that talks about the greatest example of what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is what we do out there in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. Homes, occupation, and affairs. Where nobody gives a shit what my sobriety date is, who my sponsor is, what my home group is, how many commitments I have, how many meetings I go to, and how long my string of chips is hanging off my cuff if you're new in a rehab. You know? Now, they care about what I do and if I keep my commitments. Right? That my yes is yes and my no is no. And so what does that look like? You know, it's my mom's birthday. We'll just say she's going to be 60 years old and it's her birthday and I've got the coffee commitment at NABA. Never occurs to me that I might ask my friend Trey, "Hey Trey, it's my mom's birthday. I really ought to be there. This is a big deal. Could you cover my coffee for me?" No, I'm the AA poster boy. I'm willing to go to any lengths, don't you know? I'm willing to sacrifice my mother's birthday so I can keep the coffee commitment, so I can actually be there. But keeping the commitment means either you're there or you got somebody to fill it for you, right? See, and in the last 14 years, I have not missed my mother's birthday for any reason. I was just out in California. She turned 85. I was out there 2 weeks ago, and she's in a memory care facility, and she recognized me when I came in, and we took a selfie, and I showed it to her 10 minutes later, and she didn't know who was in the picture. And I knew that's how it was going to be. And you see, my mind tells me, why even bother go? She's not going to remember. You know. But Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me so. So you know what happened was, I told you I went out and I've lost this conscious contact with God. I had a conscious contact with God, but I quit doing what's necessary to keep that. Our book talks about not just keeping it, but growing in understanding and effectiveness. And basically what had happened was I had arrived. I was comfortable with exactly where I was. I didn't want anything to change. You know, why can't we, back in when we're talking in step three of the book, talks about wanting to be the director, right? And really what that is about is I want to take a picture and I want the frickin' world to stop right here and never move again. This is perfect. And, you know, unfortunately the world doesn't work that way. And, you know, what happened was, I said, I had been an alcoholic, and I became an alcoholic in those 3 years I was out between May of 2006 until December 16th of 2009. And for the first time in my life, I've got a crap ton of money in the bank. I got enough money to drink and use like I want to drink and use. I can party like a rock star for a long time, right? Not just a few days, because, you know, I've just been a waiter most of my life, and, you know, if I miss too many days of work, I'm going to be homeless, you know. And I started doing that. And I went out, and like I said, I ended up in the hospital, and I tried to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous right away, and I couldn't get that sobriety feeling. And granted, I wasn't willing to get a new sponsor or even go back to the old one. I wasn't willing to do anything but show up at meetings and whine about how you people treated me badly when I went out. And I got to that point that the book talks about where we're at the jumping off place. You know, and God either is or he isn't. You know, we can seek spiritual help or drink to the bitter end. And I says, you know what, I'm going to drink to the bitter end because I've done your deal. You know, come on, how can you go from a book study sponsoring all these people, going to all these meetings and go get drunk? It doesn't work. I'm the guy in chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail as they followed a path. You know, I followed it. I'm that guy. It's not going to work for me. You know, it's not going to work. And I tried to drink and use myself to death, and what I found out was, now again, I'm smoking a lot of crack. I don't want to smoke, but I think I've got some friends here. Anybody ever have eyeball prints on their rearview mirror? But I'm starting to take drinks. I don't want to drink. For the first time in my life, you know what, God? Can I just have a half pint, Bucks? No, I can't do it. I end up, you know, smoking every day, and end up drinking a liter of vodka every day for 3.5 years. I had met my wife, and I told her, "Don't fall in love with me. You're the rebound girl." That was our second date. You know, we're going to date for 90 days. That we're going to have a good time. I'm going to kick you to the curb, and I hope we can be friends. Day 91, I took her to meet my mother. Go figure. You know, we've been married since, we've been together since that time when we got married December 28th of 2007. And we're still married, and I'd love to tell you all is bliss, and we are happily married every day. And that is not true. She doesn't like me a lot of the time, and I don't like her. You know? And that's when love has to step in. It's like meeting Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't really know anybody here, but I've about four people that I've had a conversation with, and I don't know the rest of you, and I probably don't like most of you. Yeah? That's all good, and you probably don't like me. And it's okay, because that's where love comes in. That's where love's got to come in, is when I'm doing things I don't want to do with people I don't want to be around. Like I say, you know what, if you like me, you haven't known me long enough, and if you don't like me, you haven't known me long enough. But, she told me, though, December 16th, 2009, if I come home, you're drunk, you're gone. And by this time, the money's run out, and I'm just a sloppy, corner-pissing drunk. You know? And she's having to go buy me my bottle at 6 o'clock in the morning. California liquor stores open at 6. I don't know what time they open here. Right? And they sell liquor on Sundays. And she would be showing up in her work clothes at 6 o'clock in the morning buying a fifth of cheap vodka. And the people in our small town that we lived in probably thought she was the alcoholic. But it was me. But she says, I come home, you're drunk, you're gone. And I couldn't not drink. See, I've been trying to not drink for about the last year. And I can't not do it. And I refuse to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because it won't work. And I don't have enough money to put myself in rehab or even a detox. And I wanted to die. You know? That day I tried to take my life. I was going down a canyon road to go in to meet my drug dealer, drunk off my ass, and I had stole some money from my wife, and I'd never done that. My conscience wouldn't let me do that, and I figured it was time to die. And there was a truck coming the other way, and I pulled my car across that center line. And we went head on at over 100 miles an hour combined impact. And I'm here. I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be here. You know, and crazy thing was, is I came out of a coma after 2 weeks, and I don't want to be here, and I'm angry. Jesus Christ, I'm a loser. All scorecards in my life read zero. I can't even kill myself. I'm an absolute loser. This is what I'm thinking. And a doctor comes in after about 3 days of being out of this coma, and I'm still not in my right mind, but I can hold a conversation, and he tells me, you know, it's a good thing you tried to crash your car. I didn't tell anybody I tried to commit suicide. I didn't tell anybody that. Not even at the podium for 7 years until the statute of limitations run out on the potential crime that I had committed. You know, and he says, you know, it's a good thing you crashed your car, because when we opened you up, yeah, I had gone septic, and Christmas Eve they took me into surgery. I had gone septic, and I'd blown up like a 9-month pregnant woman from septicemia, and they told my wife that I was going to die Christmas Day. But we're going to do one more MRI and see if we can't find really what's going on, because they didn't know. They found I had severed my small intestine. While they were in there, they also found that I had perforated that intestine long before, and I was slowly poisoning myself to death. And he says, David, if you had not crashed your car, you'd be dead today. And I still don't want to believe that God's behind this. And it's not good here. It's not good to be sober. I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came back on a white card and a court card. You know, and I would go to 2 meetings a month, because that's all I could stand you people. And I go to this men's meeting out in the country with a bunch of old farts, you know. And we're sober, it's good. They're all sober 20-plus years, and a lot of them are still my friends today, you know, and they listen to my dribble. And I tell them how AA wasn't going to work for me. And you people suck, and screw you and the horse you rode in on. And I'm only here because my wife makes me come. She won't let me sign a court card. And by the way, I'd like the free cigarettes. You know, and I still like the free cigarettes. Thanks, Todd. You're my savior. And, you know, at 3 years dry, you know, I'm drier than a popcorn fart. We had moved. Another amazing thing, you know, we bought a house. I'm unemployed, unemployable. I'm half crippled, 3.5 years sober. We're barely making ends meet, and it's 2013 at the bottom of the housing market. And we ended up buying a house. I don't know how we do that. I saw something. I said, hey, we could do something different, honey, because somebody else I saw buy a house is like, well, if they could buy a house, we could buy a house. Is it odd or is it God? How does that happen? But we moved into that house, and there was an AA clubhouse that people used to bring the meeting to me when I was too sick to come to the meeting after I got out of that hospital. You know, I was in the hospital for over 3 months, and I wasn't able to go out for very long for another couple months after them. And these AA guys started bringing a meeting to me against my wishes. You know, my wife said there were some AA people that wanted to bring a meeting to me, and would I have them? And I knew that what the proper answer was. You know, when your wife asks you that, you just say, yes, dear. You know? And they came, and we had a great meeting, and you know what, I'm still friends with some of those people. When I was out in California, I got to see some of those people, you know, and thank them. You know, and they came from this place called The Grange. It's AA. There was AA meetings there, and it's right down the street from my house, and I walked down there half hour late to a morning meeting. At 3 years and 3 months, and probably right on 3 years and 3 months, walking in that meeting, just wanting a free cigarette. I figured I could suffer your nonsense for a half an hour in this morning meeting to get a free cigarette. Something happened in that time. And I had come to believe in God. I had come to have some sort of faith in God and have some sort of relationship with God. Only going to two meetings a week, or a month, because I lived out in the country, and I needed to have this one-on-one time with God, right? Just me and God, to find a relationship with that God that the book, when the book talks about, don't protect the alcoholic from drinking. You know, you can put him on the Greenland ice cap, and he wouldn't be safe there, because sure enough, an Eskimo will come by with a bottle and screw things up. You see, I need the God that's going to protect me from a drink in that situation. And that's at least how I look at it today. Then I just thought it sucked and I wanted to die. And that's how I was when I come into this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in March of 2013, and the light went back on. I decided, you know what? I walked in there wanting to be even with my wife, give her as many years sober as I gave her drunk, so I could be even, I can die in peace. And I walked out of that room after 30 minutes saying, you know what? I want to be sober. I want to live this life. I want to do this deal. And I got a new sponsor, and we went through the book again, and I got real. And I told somebody everything and got to listen to his. He took me through the steps a different way. He took the steps with me. You know, kind of like you go to a men's retreat or something, you know, and that's kind of how we did them. And I got to be good to be here, and it got to be good to be sober. I got active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm a pig. I had three home groups. Georgia's kind of strange. It seems like they frown on that. And in California, they do things a little bit different, but even people thought I was weird because I was part of three different group consciousnesses, because I was an active member of each one of those meetings. You know, these are meetings I went to two or three times a week, all of them. And I was active in them. And I don't do group consciousnesses because I hate the bullshit that happens in a group conscience meeting. You know? And I went to one to vote somebody in to be the treasurer of our group, and I ended up being in that group conscience for 8 years and was chair of that group two different times and treasurer two different times and blah, 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 and all well and good. But what's happened here is that it went from, you know, I did not want to be here. I didn't believe I belonged here, and I'm trying to remove myself from the planet. Because it was not good to be here. And it was never good to be sober. Right. We talk about the bedevilments in page 52. You see, I'm that way sober. I'm absolutely useless to you and everybody around me. Sober. With no God. I'm that way sober with my handouts. And what do you got for me? Now, how many of you are still walking around here? What do you got for me? I'm wondering why it's not good to be here and be so, you know, sitting in that seat. I used to come in late, leave early, get your free cigarette, drink your coffee. I got money in my pocket, but, oh, man, all I got is 20. I'm not going to go get changed. Whatever. I'm not a part of it. I don't show up at a group conscience. I'm not a part of it. And, oh, I don't have a sponsor. And I haven't taken the steps. And I wonder why it sucks to be sober. And, you know, there's a price to be paid, and I have to pay it on a daily basis. But the promises for me happened, you know, when I get halfway through these amends. Right? I find out what's blocking me from God in steps 4 and 5, and I share that. And I get into 6 and 7, and I keep it real simple. You know, I come with sponsors, and I sponsor guys, so we go through the steps quickly, right away. You know, we'll go through them again and again and again at deeper levels. But that initial thing is we've got to get to where it's okay to be in my skin. You know, and I go make these amends. You see, I can look another man in the eye after I do a fifth step, and I can look God in the eye if I could see him that way. But I can't look you in the eye. You know, and I go out and I make these amends and I get right. And you know what? I don't know if any of you ever like going to the grocery store and you went around a corner too fast. You go, oop! I don't want to talk to that person. You know? Or you get invited to a party. You get invited to some function. Who's going to be there? Oh, no, I don't want to see that person. Nope. You're not telling the person on the other end what you did, but, you know, you did something with his old lady or whatever, stole money from him or, you know, I don't know, stole his dog and, you know, held it ransom for the insurance or the You know, the finder's fee. We used to do that when I was a kid. Anyway, I was a bad person. I told you. But, you know, what happens? I do these things. You know, when I haven't had to go around a corner in a supermarket in 14 years and worry about who was around the corner. I haven't got invited to a party and said, who's going to be there? Because I'm worried about who I'm going to see. And, you know, what's my life look like today? So, I got dressed late. I work in my jammies. I God bless me, my own business. I work from home. I work on the computer. I talk on the phone and play on job sites all day. I recruit for Yamaha Motor Corporation and anybody else that'll pay me money to find them employees. And I got blessed with that job, that work, the opportunity, you know, at 3 years sober. And is it odd or is it God? I was praying. You see, because I'm over three years without a drink, and I haven't made any money. I made $500 in 3 years. But I'm still half crippled. I'm a two-strike felon. I can't pass a background check. I can't do the kind of work that I'm trained to do anymore. And I don't know what to do. I know how to wait tables and I know how to cook, but you know what? They do background checks at restaurants these days. Yeah? They want choir boys everywhere. And I'm praying to God, God, you know what? Just show me something that I can help my wife. I can take the burden off my wife. I can feel like a man and contribute something to my house. 48 hours later, my friend calls me and says, come on, David. It's time for you to go back to work. I'll teach you how to do this. Yeah. Straight 100% commission job. Working from home, doing something I don't know nothing about. I'm like, okay. You know, and I worked 40 hours a week for 52 weeks to make $6,000 that first year. And I was happy to do it. You know, I was almost ready to quit, though. You know, and another miracle happened. I got high-speed internet. That was a big deal in 2014, that high-speed internet, you know. Like 100 megabytes, you know. And it's kind of slow today, but, you know, and I've been doing that for 11 years. And I get to serve. You know what? I get to change people's lives, the people that I help get a new job, right? That are looking for something. And I get to change companies, how they work, you know, by bringing new life and new blood into a new culture into companies. That's pretty darn cool. And they pay me a crap ton of money to do it. And you know what? I don't like it. Most of the time, my work is drudgery, talking to people, even doing interviews. I love talking to people. I'm a chatty guy. And half the people I talk to, it's like, God, why am I talking to you? But I do it. It's my job. It's what I do. And my time is about up. But my life looks like today. I sponsor some guys. I've got a sponsor. I've got two meetings I go to every week. I go to that men's meeting on Mondays at Wicked Sober, and I go to the speaker meeting on Fridays. I have commitments. I'm the speaker getter at our speaker meeting, which Tim knows that can be a thankless job, and trying to keep people coming and keep fresh voices coming, and we're just starting at that. And then I'm the chair of our group conscience, and you know, I'd rather not, you know, up here at first. I don't want to do that. I got better things to do, don't you know? I don't know what, but I can always find something better to do than what God wants me to do. You know? And I married that same woman. You see, I've got some consistency in my life. I've been with the same woman for, let me do the math here, it'll be 18 years in October. Right. I've had the same car for 8 years. It's paid for. Right. You know, I've had the same banking information for 18 years. Right. I've had the same job for 11 years. I haven't committed any felonies knowingly in 14 years. And you might not think that's much, you know. And some of you would even be glad, like, when you go, oh, wait a second, my driver's license, my registration match, and all four tires on my car match, you know. That can be a big deal. Right? And, you know, those are all big deals. You know? But the biggest deal is that I get to live a life of service today, in and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, as I said, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and my whole life is about what can you do for me with the least amount of effort, work, or input from me? Right? With that heart, Ray and I were talking about this. I'm a slothful, lazy SOB. I want some my instinct is I want something for nothing, right? And I'm running around with my hand out saying, what can you do for me? And I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I practice these principles in all my affairs on a daily basis the best that I can. And I have my hand out saying, what can I do for you? And that allows me to go home and sleep well at night and have it be good to be here and good to be sober. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, David. I love how relatable your story is. And we've asked Wes to come up and hand out the chips.
I'm Wes, I'm Alex, and we've got a chip system at the Blue Chip Speaker meeting, and we have a white chip for anybody that's just coming in or anybody coming back. Anybody just getting sober need a white chip? Alright, we got a silver chip for 30 days. Got a copper chip for 60 days. Any other 60 days? We've got a red chip for 90 days. We got 90 days. Gold chip for 6 months. Green chip for 9 months.
It'll never leave if I give it and dread.